Hi there, it's Melvin. Just wanted to take a moment to thank the team over at Thrizer for supporting this month's podcast sessions. Thrizer is a payment platform that you have to check out if you are a private paid therapist and accepting out-of-network benefits. It basically helps clients save on therapy upfront. Thrizer can help verify a client's out-of-network benefit ahead of the first session so that they get transparency up front on what their out-of-pocket costs will be. I'll tell you more about Thrizer here in the middle of our session, but if you go to sellingthecouch.com/Thrizer, you actually and then enter the code STC upon sign up, you get your first $2,500 in fees waived. Again, that's over at sellingthecouch.com/Thrizer, and be sure to enter the promo code STC. So we'll jump right into today's podcast session. Hello, hello. Welcome to session 85 of Selling the Couch. Man, I cannot believe we are at 85 sessions. Every time we do these sessions and these numbers keep increasing, I'm just like, wow, you know, it's pretty unbelievable starting this journey. Gosh, it's almost been a year and a half now of this podcast and seeing where it's come. And it's just been amazing. I think one of the neatest things with podcasting is, and I've mentioned this, is that taking a risk like this and doing something way out of your comfort zone, how it leads you to be much more courageous in other aspects of your life. So thank you so much for taking the time to listen to today's episode and for continuing to support the podcast. Our conversation today is with Allison Puryar. If you recognize the name, Allison is from the Abundance Practice Building community, and she's got a wonderful she's a private practice building coach who does wonderful work. And she was actually a guest on session 49 of the podcast. You can find that at sellingthecouch.com/session49, where she talked all about transitioning from employee into private practice owner. And today, Allison is here to talk about a topic that I know many of us struggle with, including me, which is learning to say no as a business owner. This is just a deep conversation, a practical conversation, so we'll get right into it. And today we're going to talk about a number of different aspects. We're going to start with this concept of why is it so hard for many of us to say no? And then we're going to talk more about how this concept of saying no applies in private practice. So in terms of setting fees and in terms of offering a sliding scale, in terms of niching. So for example, taking on clients that are outside of your specialty because of that fear that your private practice will not be full. And so how does that sort of impact your professional and personal development? If you're someone that really struggles to set those boundaries and to decline clients that may not be the best fit for you or refer them out, then this is definitely a session for you. So we'll get right to it. Here's my conversation with Allison Puryar from AbundancePracticeBuilding.com. Hi, Allison. Welcome back to Selling the Couch.
Thank you so much for having me, Melvin.
I'm excited for this conversation because I feel like we were just talking about this, but so many of us struggle with setting boundaries. And part of it, I think, is just because we're have compassionate hearts and are coming from a good place. But ultimately, like, we really struggle with learning to say no as business owners.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it comes from so many different places, right? It comes from our own personal stuff. A lot of us are people pleasers. A lot of us are, I think that healer personality can also like dovetail into I will be the healer for you and you. When you're building a business, you feel like you need to say yes to everything because you want to be successful. And it feels like saying yes is the way to be successful when, as we'll discuss, it's not necessarily the truth.
Yeah, no, I think I've assumed all of those things, so I'm excited for the conversation. I thought we could start really general, and I told you, like, this is a question I'm going to ask, and I don't know if it's going to go into, like, this big philosophy thing. What makes it so hard to say no?
I think that it varies person to person. I know for me, what makes it hard to say no is I want to help people. Like, I genuinely want to make sure people are well taken care of. I trust myself and my services, but there are also other people whose services I trust, which we'll talk about. But sometimes if I'm full, for instance, and I get a call and the person sounds like an ideal client for me, it's really hard for me to be like, I'm sorry, because there's also a part of me that really might like this person and feel like it's a perfect clinical fit. And that's really exciting to work with somebody who's a perfect clinical fit. I think it's also looking at your life and seeing, is it hard for you to say no to your friends or your partner or your parents? Like, how has that been an issue for you throughout the course of your life? Trying not to step into, like, too philosophical.
No, I think the two points that you just said are, like, very true. I think about, I just think, like, as healers, there's always that part of us that wants to help, you know, and I don't think it's like a bad thing, right? I think it's just knowing that that part exists.
Yeah. Like, one ugly thing that I realized about myself is that sometimes it's coming from this savior complex, as if I'm the only one who can help this person calling. And so that's another thing that I have to step back with and be like, in terms of referrals, is it really just me? Come on, Allison. Like, there are plenty of really skilled therapists where I live who work with the same or similar population. And for me to act like I am the one to help them is a little bit rooted in ego. And so stepping out of that and being more realistic about that makes it a lot easier for me to refer.
So maybe we can actually tackle that at the moment. So that situation comes up where an ideal client calls you, you've connected with them, you're thinking, oh my gosh, they're such a good fit. And then that part of you comes up, I can take them on, and you know, like, you're full and you're going to be stretching yourself. How do you hold both of those positions? So knowing there's that part of you that wants to help, and maybe it's like a savior complex thing, but also realizing you need to do what's best for you as a business owner and for yourself.
Well, I think I also can bring it back to what's best for the client. Mm. And if I'm already full, it's going to be really hard to see them as regularly as they should probably be seen. And like, if I'm feeling harried and I crammed them into my lunch break or something like that, I'm not going to be doing my best work. I'm not going to be as happy to see them. And so as a business owner, I'm not putting my best foot forward and I'm not taking care of myself. Which is going to lead to burnout, which is just a slippery slope. So I think for me, it's, luckily, I've been doing this long enough that I know my patterns, and I know, like, when something tugs at my heart in that way, I pause and I look at, okay, is this ego? Who else would be amazing to work with this client? Like, who else would be so excited to get this call? And then I'm referring. But it took me a little while to get there.
Yeah, I mean, I think you just hit on a key point, which is recognizing it as opposed to just going with it is really key.
I feel like my life right now, it's a big lesson to just pause before deciding something. It's like, no quick decisions. And it's leading to a much more mindful life and a much more balanced experience of everything, really.
Yeah, I was thinking, like, nothing like owning a private practice to bring up all of our stuff, right?
Absolutely. Always.
You wrote this article, which it was just such a well-written article, and it's called Saying No in Your Practice. And you brought up some of the ways that we as clinicians can struggle with saying no. And one of the first ways is with time. And so I was wondering if you could talk a little bit more about that.
What I've seen in my own practice and what I've seen in the practice of other folks is sometimes it's this scarcity mindset that keeps us like, okay, well, what if the phone stops ringing? Sure, I'm full right now, but right now this person is calling and they sound like a great fit. And so, yeah, I'm going to stay later on a Tuesday, or I'm going to cram them into my lunch hour, or I'm going to do a 7 a.m. counseling session. Like, I will make it work. And then if you're not full, it might be a circumstance where they're like, well, we can only come at 6 p.m. on Fridays. And if you're in this place of scarcity and I have to bring in clients now, you might agree to that, even though you wanted to work a half day on Fridays and be home by noon. So I think part of it is being really clear about what you want in your practice and holding to that with regards to a number of things, but in this circumstance, time. Often people will make it work. You'll be shocked at how many people will make the time that you offer work. And there are people who may not be able to make it work, and that's okay. You can send them to colleagues who work evenings or work weekends or work early, early mornings. So to know that you don't have to be the one to take them on, you don't have to alter what's going to work for you and your business and your life, you can set some boundaries and hold them.
I mean, it's such a different way of looking at it. So I had like a really practical question. So when you were thinking about like your practice or as you're coaching folks, do you have them figure out what their ideal schedule is before like actually scheduling clients, or how do you go about that process?
So I have in my practice building groups, the very first group is about clarity, and that's laying out what you want your practice to look like in the context of your life. Because often, you know, if we're coming out of agencies, we're used to like, I work my life around this job and when I'm supposed to be here. And the beautiful thing about private practice, one of many, is that you get to decide. You get to say what you want. And so kind of deciding what you want your life to look like and fitting your practice into that is a really, really important piece. I have people in the group sometimes who are, their private practices are full, but they've built the wrong practice because they didn't have this clarity. Mm. So they're either seeing the clients they don't want to be seeing, or they're working times they don't want to be working on insurance and they don't want to be, or on insurance panels that pay lower and they only want the higher ones or whatever. So that clarity piece, I think, is so vital for anybody starting a private practice to really sit down and look, what do you want for your life? Because I love what John Harrison said in your podcast recently about like, this is the story of my practice. Like, we're in the middle of it. So that idea that people will be filling your slots. You don't have to mess up your life, basically, to fit people in.
It's very ironic because I feel like a lot of us go in or think about private practice because we want that freedom, right? To be able to spend more time with family, have weekends off, whatever it is, right?
Yeah.
And I think that initial hurdle of when we jump in, it's like all of the fears of owning the small business, like all of those hopes and dreams, the temptation is, I think they can just go right out the door.
I see this all over the place on like Instagram and things, this whole like entrepreneurship is working 80 hours a week for yourself so you don't have to work 40 hours a week for someone else. And I hate it. I want to be like, no, you don't have to. Like, you can decide to do that, but you do not have to do that.
I think what you're saying is absolutely true, because what's the whole, like, is it all worth it, right? Like, if our life is so unbalanced that it leads to, I don't know, like unhealthy patterns in other aspects of our life. And I do think, like, what you're saying is private practice and thinking about time and the slots that you have, like, even though those seem like minor things, it's a good reminder that we're building something for the long term.
Yeah.
The next section that you started to talk about was that we can have struggles with setting boundaries is in money, right? Mm-hmm. Tell us a little bit more about the struggle of saying no when it comes to money.
Yeah. So sometimes, especially when you're building, there's this mindset of, I'll just take on more sliding scale people because $50 is better than $0. But the thing is, if you're working with longer term clients, especially, that means at some point you're going to be full and getting calls for people who are going to be paying your full fee, but you've got a caseload full of folks who are paying like a sliding scale or something like that. So I think you can accidentally trap yourself into the wrong practice. And I'm pro sliding scale personally. Like, I have a sliding scale that I use, but I have a certain number of slots that I offer a sliding scale. And when those slots are full, I don't offer it. I refer. Hmm. I also see it in not upholding no-show and late cancellation policies, or when people decide to increase their rate and that first person calls after they've made that decision and they're like not saying the new rate because they're nervous about it. Mm. Not collecting past due fees. That's another thing. Somebody in one of the Facebook groups said something about their client asked for a refund after the intake. And that's just such an interesting experience, as if like what the expectation was that an intake is going to like solve the problems or whatever. And then also putting in unpaid direct service time, like really long phone conversations, not having a boundary around what that looks like. So for me, I have in my paperwork, and we talk about it in the first session, that any conversation over 5 minutes, I'm going to prorate at my full fee. And yeah, I don't get calls, which is nice, but I hold that boundary, and my clients know me well enough to know that I'm going to hold all the boundaries that I set in my paperwork. And I talk about all of those boundaries in that first session, so we're on the same page and nothing's a surprise to them financially, because I think that can create quite a rift. And I think it's important to talk about it too, not just like hide it in your paperwork and hope that they read it, because then if you are upholding a no-show policy that you didn't verbalize, they can feel really resentful because they might not have read the paperwork, because how many of us really read all that paperwork? So,
well, I mean, I think like even though that seems monotonous, it's such a vital part, I think, of establishing trust, right? And rapport.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
And being absolutely clear.
And I think that there's this thing that therapists do where it's all rooted in money shame, but acting like the money doesn't matter when it does. Mm. Like maybe we don't want it to matter, but it does. This is our livelihood and this is our job. And it's not the thing that matters the most, but it is important. And so to not get stuck in this inauthentic place of like, oh, it's okay that she didn't pay for last session. Like, it's no big deal. It's just money. Because you're probably going to build some resentment. It's probably going to impact the relationship. Money is a clinical issue. So I think giving time to consider unintended consequences, just like we would with any kind of clinical intervention, and being really clear before you offer a sliding scale outside of your designated slots or those kinds of things.
This, I feel like we could have an entire conversation on, but I'm just going to ask it really quick.
Yeah.
So when you decide to raise your fees and you're already seeing a client and you want to talk to them about that, what is sort of the standard thing that you say to clients?
So what I've done in the past, I have kept clients at their regular fee, like the fee that we agreed upon. Mm-hmm. For me, that's what feels better. I've kind of rooted around to see like, is this money shame or is this like, what is this about? But I think for me, I see it as we entered into this clinical relationship under this premise of this is how much it's going to cost. And now that they're vulnerable and have some attachment to me and our work together, it doesn't feel good for me to raise it. Mm-hmm. That's not to say that's the right way. I don't think that there's a right way or the wrong way. That's just the way it feels for me. But with new people, I do raise it after I've made the decision of what to raise it to. And I think there are really good ways. Like I've heard of people, and at one point I had in my paperwork, in January, my fee will increase by $10 and then increase every year. Mm. But what I have done historically for whatever reason is raise it in big chunks primarily. So usually at the point that I'm full, I'll raise it, and then that doesn't always fall on January.
Yeah.
So that's where I've kind of, I've played with different ways, and this is how I've evolved it and where it lives right now. I've just raised it in a big chunk and we'll see if I raise it later.
So whenever, let's say like an existing client, you guys have a set fee and then they terminate, and when they come back later, do they go at the existing fee or the one that you agreed to previously?
The existing fee. Yeah.
The next section that you talked about is this idea of niche, and I feel like this idea of niching has come up a lot, but tell us a little bit more, because I think this is so interesting how the fear of not having a successful practice, right, it can kind of get us out of the niches in our specialties.
I have an example that happened not that long ago. So I've been in private practice for, I think, 11 years now. And when I first moved to Asheville, was running a support group, one of the parents came up and they said, we really want our daughter to see you. And I said, I don't work with adolescents. It's not my strong suit. Like, here are the people that are great with adolescents. And they're like, no, you. And I think dad must have been a salesman or something, because he like sold me on, like he hit all my heartstrings. Mm-hmm. And I did not maintain my boundary. So I end up taking on an adolescent that is not a good fit for me. I just know I'm not good at it. And I tried doing research and I tried consulting with my peers, but it was not a successful clinical experience. And so it was a good lesson for me that hold your boundaries, Allison. You knew this. Even though I've been holding boundaries for years and years and years, like sometimes you just have this soft spot that somebody can get in. But especially when you're starting and you have this open space in your schedule, it can be really easy to have somebody who calls you up that is not your ideal client all of a sudden be in your schedule magically. You're like, I love working with that. Sure, I can do that. And just because you can work with a presenting problem or a particular type of client doesn't mean you should, because it's not necessarily where your best work is going to be. It's not necessarily what's in the best interest of the client.
So we had talked about, especially when you're first starting your practice and you're waiting for the clients to find you and you realize you have all of these open slots. So how do you avoid that temptation to take on those clients that aren't the best fit and see it kind of as a long-term thing?
So I think trusting, just trusting that your practice is going to build, just throw whatever faith you can at it, and making sure like you've got a marketing plan and you have like a plan to grow and build instead of just opening your doors and hoping the phone rings. But if you're working a plan of some sort, it's a lot easier to trust like, okay, my people are going to be calling me. And I think if you're not clear on your niche, everything else is harder. Your marketing plan is harder. You're saying no to people are outside of your usual wheelhouse is harder. But you're going to build. It's not the hardest thing in the world to grow a practice. It can be hard emotionally, but in terms of business building, it's so doable as long as you have some direction. Another thing that's really helpful is having a good network of people you can refer to. So when someone calls you and says, I've been diagnosed with borderline personality disorder and I'm looking for a new therapist, you don't like working with folks with BPD or you're not really skilled at DBT or some other ways of working with them, to know who the DBT therapists or the people who love working with folks with borderline are in town, so you can feel really good about making that referral. You're helping somebody else build their practice. You're helping this client get the person who can really help them. And you're leaving space for when that person that is your ideal client gives you a call, you can just get them right in.
How did you go about finding those people? Like the other clinicians that would be good fits?
I'm totally in love with networking. And I'm both outgoing and an extrovert. And I know a lot of people don't love networking, though I am convinced I can sell people on networking even if they're super introverted. I've started practices in 3 different cities now as I've ping-ponged across the country. And now putting down roots and we're settled. But each person or each city that I moved to, I created a networking list before I moved there. And so I already had a list of people that I wanted to meet who might be natural referral sources. So as an eating disorder therapist, it might be eating disorder dietitians, other eating disorder therapists, psychiatrists, gynecologists, primary care providers. So writing down the people that I know my clients might go to first before they seek out a therapist, or the therapist they might seek out who might be full. And so I have coffee with all those people rather than just sending a letter. I think a lot of people try to just send a letter like announcing that they're in town. I haven't seen for people that actually yields a lot of referrals. There are some exceptions, but for most people that just something that goes in the recycle bin versus establishing a relationship with someone. So for me, I can just like people and feel super energized at the end of the day. For someone that's really introverted, I usually recommend like slow and steady. So maybe meeting 1 or 2 people tops a week, but making sure you're meeting at least 1 or 2 people tops a week so that you're kind of in a flow with it, but not burning yourself out.
Yeah. You just said something which I think is like really key. I think even with something like networking, I think the temptation is always to try to just do this like in like one fell swoop. And it's really, I think sometimes we forget it's the individual relationships and the individual trust that really matters, right? Like, so there's a huge difference between sending a letter and just saying, hey, I'm in town, versus saying, hey, can we grab lunch or can we grab coffee?
Yeah, it's a huge difference. And you get to know people. I mean, that's actually how I've met most of my friends in both last cities that I lived in, was through networking. So it turns out I hang out with a lot of therapists, but that's just fine by me. So yeah.
You had a line in that article where you were talking about niching, and I just wanted to read it because I just thought it was so good. It said, referring them means that you will do better work, they will get their needs met more effectively, and the world will be a happier place, and you'll be a happier person. Yeah.
Right. In my mind, that's how it works. I mean, it's coming from this place of abundance, right? Rather than scarcity, that everybody is going to get their needs met if we just keep doing what's right.
Yeah. The last section you talked about was sort of the impact of not saying no, right? Like, so I wanted to break that down a little bit more. What are some of like the short-term impacts you think at either a business level or a personal level or both of saying yes when you shouldn't be, I guess?
Yeah. So whether it's yes to a time that doesn't work for you or a financial agreement that doesn't work for you or a niche that doesn't work for you, you're going to have these little kernels of resentment probably, which I think is detrimental, not think. I know it's detrimental to the therapeutic relationship. And those things leak out. We don't look forward to the clients that we're feeling really like even the tiniest bit of resentment towards. And that's something we have to work on in ourselves, because once you've agreed to something, you can try to renegotiate and see. But if you've agreed to somebody who has a really rigid schedule and can't do another time, for instance, then you know, you're the one who agreed to it. So you got to kind of write it out and work on your own feelings. Mm. I think if you're not being honest and modeling what you need in your business and your life, like there's a little bit of hypocrisy there, because we're frequently asking our clients to do that, to set boundaries, to maintain boundaries. And I think it's up to us to model that as well.
You said something like one before we were starting, and I just thought it was so beautiful about the modeling we give our clients. And a lot of times they haven't had that opportunity, like they haven't been shown what appropriate boundaries are.
Right. So, I mean, somebody who's grown up with parents who didn't maintain boundaries and then didn't have a model in any of their relationships, so all of their relationships are kind of boundaryless and they can test limits and usually get what they want but actually don't want because they really wanted the boundary to be held.
Right.
If we're able to hold this boundary for our clients, they can trust us. Mm. And I think that's so important to model for people. It creates such a sense of safety. In the same way we set boundaries with our kids, that safety is important. So I'm very pro boundaries in our relationships with our clients. And that doesn't mean being hyper rigid or being like the stone person that they're sitting across from. I'm definitely not a blank slate therapist or a blank slate person personally, but having the conversation with them about what this relationship entails and then holding to that is so vitally important for them to be able to do their good work.
Yeah, I've just never thought of it on that level before, and I'm just so glad that, like, you said it in that way.
Thanks.
So we talked a little bit about the short term. What are like the big like long-term impacts of not saying no?
Well, I think you end up getting burned out, right? Like, why not just stay in an agency if you're going to work all day and night and not get paid very much and see everybody? Right. You may as well just keep with the stability. So I think getting really burned out, feeling like you've spent all this time, energy, and risk building this thing that was supposed to be your dream and is now just work. Because what's possible and what's available to you in private practice is so amazing, because you get to say, like, you can totally design it to your lifestyle. And to do otherwise, I think you're really missing out.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Allison, thank you so much for doing this.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
What are some of the best ways that folks can get in touch with you?
Well, they can check me out at abundancepracticebuilding.com. I also have a free checklist for anybody who's getting started. It's all the nitpicky stuff that you got to do on the front end, and also throw some confidence boosting things in there as well. And that's at abundancepracticebuilding.com/checklist.
Awesome. I will be sure to link to both in the show notes.
Wonderful. Awesome. Thanks so much.
You're welcome. Bye.
Bye.
Hi there. Hope you enjoyed my conversation with Allison. To be honest, having this conversation was tough for me. Just thinking about my own professional journey and how, you know, a lot of times I genuinely come from a place of wanting to help and wanting to give back, but sometimes that means that I don't do the best job of saying no. And so I hope that it motivates you to think a little bit differently and think about the impact of saying yes too many times. It was, I believe it was Joe Sanok on one of the previous episodes of this podcast who said that if you say yes too many times, that you're actually saying no to other things. And I just thought that was such a nice way to reframe that. Allison mentioned an article that she wrote. You can find that on the show notes page at sellingthecouch.com/session and the number 85. If you'd like to continue this conversation on setting boundaries in your private practice, please join us in the Selling the Couch Facebook community. It's absolutely free. You can join at sellingthecouch.com/community. We just passed 2,100 members and we're quickly growing. It's such a wonderful community and we're more than happy to support you. Thank you again for taking the time to listen to this week's podcast, and I will see you next time. Bye.
Thanks for listening to the Selling the Couch podcast. For more great content and to stay up to date, visit www.sellingthecouch.com.
So if you've been listening to the STC podcast for a while, or you've been listening to podcasts and you've had this thought of, Mel, I would love to launch my own podcast in order to grow my business, just wanted to encourage you to check out our free podcasting workshop, which is over at sellingthecouch.com/podcasting workshop. You can basically sign up at a day and a time that works for you. It's 90 minutes. And when I do these workshops or when I record them, I truly believe in quality teaching, so it's going to be well worth your time. We're going to go through gear recommendations and how to launch strategically and how to think about monetizing your podcast and how to line up your podcast with your existing offers and how to do it strategically and authentically and not salesy and slimy and all of those things. So again, the link is over at sellingthecouch.com/podcasting workshop.